Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill Rock. You are right. It is 9 minutes after 8 o'clock, and it is indeed time to sit down with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on our weekly get together here on a Friday. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. You do know what today is?
It's Friday, the 27th of February.
That is true. There are multiple answers to this question, many of which can be right and concurrent.
Okay, and I don't have any other.
It is the Dominican Independence Day.
I didn't know that.
Well, I do know that, and you know how much work I've done on speaking Spanish or studying to speak Spanish.
You seemingly, from what you tell me, very hard at this.
Before I die, I am going to accomplish this, although it's a race, I will say that.
You are a talented man in many, many ways, but you seem to be, I don't want to characterize
you,
it as struggling.
You, I know, wanted to say, quiero decir feliz día de independencia a la comunidad dominica en la ciudad de Nueva York. And it just means I want to say, decir.
Well, there's a lesson here.
Feliz día de independencia. Congratulations on independence to the community. Dominican community.
Which is a large community here in the city.
Yeah, very large community, yep. And very vibrant, growing, work very hard, very proud. You know, like everybody else, the difference between New York and other places is we hyphenate where we come from. So, you know, they would say that they're Dominican Americans, and doesn't mean that they love where they are and they love where they came from.
And so they will be partying this weekend.
I don't know that. They're probably just working. This weather, the first of the St. Patrick's Day parades.
This weekend?
First one, and it's supposed to snow. I will be there.
And this is where? Do you know?
In Queens. Absolutely.
Because I know on your calendar you have the shamrock on the date of each and every parade.
You know, I was with somebody the other night who comes from a different part of the country, came here for an assignment for a year, and marched in parades with us and participated in all these things. And he grew to absolutely love New York. But he pointed out to me the other night, it's only in New York that we do this kind of stuff. A friend of mine the other day was talking about St. Patrick's Day parades, and he said, in Ireland, he said, maybe we'd have one. Nobody cares. That's not they don't care. It's just not as big a deal. Americans take pizza, you think of it as Italian. Invented here. Chop suey, think of it as Chinese, invented here. Americans.
Well, that's why America is as great as it is, because most of this stuff all starts here.
And why my waistline is as big as it is.
Exactly. So I was actually in Dublin for St. Patrick's Day a number of years ago, and the parade had started to grow because the fathers of Dublin saw that there was revenue behind this from a tourist.
Capitalism's a wonderful thing. Actually, all kidding aside, the Irish economy is in very big trouble.
You know, it was booming, though, in the 90s.
All the
economy. Yeah.
I remember my company used to hire lots of people, young kids getting out of college in Ireland. They speak English, well-educated, hard-working, couldn't get jobs. They came to America. And then after a while, when the Irish economy started to improve, a number of them went back. And when I go to visit, they show up at these events. Remember me? Sure I do.
It's a long time ago. Yeah. Absolutely. You have brought a guest with you this morning, Robert Doerr.
Robert Doerr. He runs HRA, as you know, as the Human Resources Administration. It is a city welfare agency that does an awful lot of things, but reason we are here, he is getting an award from the state. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Robert. Good morning to you.
Felicitaciones, as they would say in Spanish. And what he's getting an award for is increasing the amount of money that HRA has been able to get from parents, mainly fathers, occasional mother, who were ordered by the courts to pay child support and don't. And so he's gone after, and he's raised close to $700 million
That's a lot of money, Robert.
Well, it's a lot of kids, a lot of families. No one family, you're not talking about enormous sums of money here. And it's up about $50 million from last year. Congratulations.
That's right. Thank you.
How did you go about that? What did you do differently?
Well, the Child Support Program does a number of things. First of all, we garnish wages and we pursue court orders with the court. We suspend driver's license for people that fail to pay. We seize bank accounts. Over the years, it's developed a number of powers, sometimes using computer matches of databases to find people, because sometimes that's an issue. And we also send a strong message that if you're an absent parent and you have a child, you need to pay child support. And that message is getting through.
Has it always been your department that was responsible for this?
HRA has always had the child support program as part of it because it came out of the old welfare world was where it began. Moms would come on welfare and the agency would say, we need to get that other parent to contribute too. And so it started there. And it's grown because other kinds of mothers, more middle-class mothers and others who found the court system failed them, come to us because we're very good at it. But mostly it is a low-income, poor single-parent program. And last year, for instance, we collected more than $200 million for moms who used to be on cash welfare. So it's an important source of income for a family to keep them moving towards self-sufficiency.
Wow, unbelievable. That's really good news.
You know, the bottom line is if you are a parent, the responsibilities that come with being a parent. Children are not just dolls to play with. They require guidance and hard work and sacrifice for 20-plus years, and in many cases, as you and I know, for longer than that. And if you're a father or a mother, you have a responsibility, and we're going to make sure that you fulfill your responsibility the best we can.
More numbers, more people requiring your services?
Well, actually, the total caseload numbers remained pretty constant over the last couple of years. It hasn't gone up that much. We're just getting a little better.
Are you anticipating with the economics? Not really.
One thing that happens with economics is sometimes the ability of the non-custodial parent to pay gets tougher. We don't garnish as much wages, although it hasn't happened yet. People are still meeting that commitment. But the caseload has remained fairly flat. We're just getting better at it.
All right. Well, that's good. And I know that you made the decision, I'm assuming at Bob's direction, about the federal stimulus money that was going to eliminate the work requirement for at least a small group of those
people. It's fascinating. What we did, we have the ability to not require work or to require work. Work can be training as well, and it's tough to get a job, but at least you've got to be looking or whatever. And we're talking about a group of people 18 years old to 50 years old who don't have any dependents. Now, keep in mind, if you have dependents, there's all these federal programs have work requirements. So a mom with five kids may very well have to go to work. We're talking about a person who has no kids. And I fail to see why anybody would argue they shouldn't be out there just like the rest of us who are earning a living, trying to earn a living. Society should help people who aren't lucky or can't do it for a variety of reasons, but they have a responsibility to try. And I come back to the same thing I said before about if you have a kid. First responsibility, you don't say to the kid, I'm sending the kid to school, let the teachers deal with it. As a parent, you have to deal with it. Teachers, we have great teachers. They try, they can do some things, but they don't replace parents and responsibility. The government can't replace or hopefully doesn't have to or can't afford to replace responsibility for everything. And the same thing is true here.
All right.
And I've been in this business since I worked for Governor Pataki in the welfare agency at the state level. And this business about requiring people to meet their responsibilities first is what has worked in welfare policy to both reduce poverty and get people off of cash assistance.
Which is exactly the number one priority.
If you take a look at the big reforms in welfare, this is one of them, requiring you to work. People do, and it brings the welfare rolls down. And the other thing is when they started, and Giuliani really, if you look at during the Giuliani administration, welfare recipients went down dramatically. Fingerprints made a very big difference.
So you knew who you were dealing with.
Well, most people are honest. There were a handful of scammers. Get rid of the scammers. I don't have any sympathy for the scammers. You know, once you had fingerprints, you couldn't double dip. And that made a big difference. But, you know, if we are going to help those who really need help, Number one, we can't waste money on those that don't. And number two, the public's not going to have the willingness to reach into their pocket and take their own resources to help others unless they feel that it's being done efficiently, it's being done honestly, only people that need help get help, and that the people that get help are trying to do their part. There are people who just, luck of the draw, physical, mental problems, a part of disruptive, broken families. Not all, everybody's as lucky as you and I. And some people just literally can't make a difference. But for those that can, they're going to have to. They're going to have to pay child support. That's exactly the same thing as going, trying to work to get off welfare.
Robert, congratulations to you. Now, my sympathies as well, because I know the mayor well enough to know that if you did it this year, you got to do it better next year. So
that well said. Thank you very much. I owe you $5 for saying that, or the city owes you.
Congratulations.
Robert, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Continued good work. Gentlemen, hang on. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. Back with the mayor. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you. Of course, the you part coming up. If you have a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. Let's talk about roadways. I got a couple of questions here. You probably anticipated them. First, we'll talk about Broadway and the pedestrian.
I'm shocked. It never occurred to me you'd ask about that.
Exactly. I mean, you've stirred the pot once again.
Well, let me start out by saying it can't be worse than what it is now.
No, I mean, no arguments from anybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, going down Broadway is impossible. Try to get to the theater district, which is a big part of our economy, hard. People walking in the streets because the sidewalks just literally can't come in. I think the number is something like 347,000 people in Times Square every day.
I mean, it's a lot.
Sure, and it's good for business and that sort of thing, but the accident rate is Times Square and Herald Square much higher than any place else along Broadway. So you have to do something. And people have been complaining about this for a long time. And I think just making little tweaks obviously hasn't worked. We've tried different things. It's time to really rethink it. Jeanette Sedekon took a look at, with her traffic engineers, at what's really happening. And it turns out that because you have this street that started out as an Indian path, became a cart path, and when they put down the grid, they just, it was too big a street to get rid of. Already it had.
We're talking Broadway now.
Broadway. It cuts through both Times Square and Herald Square and creates an enormous traffic jam. And it does it in two ways. One, you have to have an extra set of lights because you have to have a set of lights that allow East and West streets to cross. Then you have to have a set of lights that allow the North-South Avenues, 6th and 7th, to go. Then you have to have a third set of lights to allow Broadway to go.
And we thought it was so simple.
Nothing's simple in life. But you can model all this in computers. That's what they do well. That's the way traffic is done. And it really, the science is very good. It's because you can easily measure the number of cars. You see these things in the road. You drive over a pneumatic black piece of hose that's put across the road. Or you put cameras up, and then your cameras, the computer can even count the number of cars and measure how long it takes and that sort of thing. And so the other thing is that if you think about it, when you get very close to the actual intersection, just north or south of it, you have to, on the cross streets, you have a light, let's say, at 6th, a light at 7, traffic lights, but you also have to have a light at Broadway. So you start off, go half a block, and all of a sudden you stopped again. And what happens is now there's cars behind you that can't even get into the block, and they're blocking the avenues. So if you stopped all of that and went back to just a straight grid, and we have plenty of grids in the city. There's plenty of other places you can go and measure what happens when you have two streets that intersect perpendicularly and our block lights are a block apart. You can see what's going to happen. It's a little bit counterintuitive, but if you think about Broadway at about 72nd Street, you cannot go straight up Broadway. You have to get off and you go around because we built a big subway station a few years ago right in the middle of it. It just took over part of Broadway. I'm very optimistic that this will work. It will be a real boon for the local stores. Macy's is ecstatic because people driving don't jump out and jump into a store. People park their cars or get out half a block, walk from different stores. So foot traffic is very important to stores and restaurants, and we've got to do something to help local businesses. It's part of, you know, you think the economy's terrible. big problems nationally. We can't do much about the national or the statewide stuff. We can do things for the citizens of the city. And this is another program which will help people, office workers getting to and from. And if you say, okay, well, what about deliveries to the stores on Broadway? Nobody stops on Broadway. The trucks aren't allowed to stop on Broadway to make deliveries.
It's all on the side streets.
They park on the side streets, bring things around on these wheeled carts, trolleys, whatever, wheelbarrows, whatever they use. So that's not going to change at all. Cab drivers say, oh, well, I can't pick people up. Except all you got to do is walk half a block off Broadway and you will be at a cross street. And for a cab driver, you make money when your cab's going. The people that work now on Broadway or live on Broadway or shop on Broadway or visit Broadway, when they need a cab, they're still going to need a cab. But if they walk half a block, the cab driver can keep going. And for cab drivers, this also is one of those things that will let them make more money because they'll be able to get their take their passenger wherever the passenger wants to go a lot further. So it's a win for the stores. It's a win for the taxi drivers. It's a big win for traffic. Our estimates are 17% improvement on 7th Avenue going down and 37% on 6th Avenue going up, just the way the lights work.
Your track record here is pretty good because some of the other road changes that you have made over the last 7 years, I'm thinking now of the no-turn cross streets and things of that nature have, I think, been accepted as working.
You know, there's an attitude that I think too many people have had for too long of that's just the way it is. If you remember, when crime rate was such that we were having 2,200 murders a year in New York City, and there were squeegee guys every place, and people were having chains ripped off their necks and all those things, people said, oh, that's just the way it is. Well, that's not just the way it is. Today, those things don't happen anymore. Somebody had the courage to approach the problem and the foresight to find innovative ways to do it, and we've brought crime down. And I remember when I came into office, the zeitgeist was, oh, after 9/11, everybody's leaving the city and crime's going to skyrocket and that sort of thing. Crime's come down another 30%. The NYPD, Kelly, that whole group, they've really done a great job. Can they do more? Yeah, the worst thing would be if we think that it's so low we can't do any better. Got to come up with new ideas, and I've charged Ray Kelly and his staff, try to come up with some new things, things you've never done before, things that people say, oh, that wouldn't work, and try them. And the same thing is true with Jeanette Sedekon. Her predecessor, Iris Weinshall, made a lot of improvements. Next one, this one's making a lot of improvements, and her successor will make a lot of improvements. I hope. You got to keep doing it.
You certainly do. We only have a minute or so.
Oh,
here.
The other thing, incidentally, if this doesn't work, we'll roll it back. There's no great expense here. You put some of these small islands in. They're just on top of the road.
You they can be bulldozed.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it in a weekend and just repave it. So there's no great – the cost is only $1.5 million. The potential is enormous, and the downside – is, as I said before, can't make it any worse, and we can always roll it back very easily.
You're going to closing your streets this summer again like you did last year?
We plan to. We're still talking about it. It was phenomenally successful. The question is it the same days, the same place, the same time of the year? My inclination is that we might want to do pretty much the same thing, but yeah, I think we're going to do that again. It brought a lot of business to stores. People loved it. I would rather do it on Sundays, but there's a lot of street fairs on Sundays, so we did it on Saturdays because there's a limited number of police we have to be at intersections and that sort of thing. And you'd like to have something every day, but yeah.
Over the last 30 years of doing this here in New York City, every 10 years or so, they roll out the idea of turning 42nd Street into a pedestrian mall with trolleys possibly. I mean, is there any talk of that?
I think Jeanette's looked at it. It carries an enormous amount of traffic, and you would really probably, if you did that, just clog up all the other streets. It doesn't lend itself to that. And trolleys are a nice idea. I've always thought the San Francisco trolleys, the cable cars, are great. You jump on, jump off, except the traffic here is much more. People would jump off into traffic.
It's not like European cities. We think of European cities, but they're small.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the questions I got yesterday at a press conference, oh, they didn't try. So, the amount of traffic we have in Times Square on Broadway is greater than the total amount of traffic in most of these other cities in the whole city. So it's very different. We have a subway system, which a lot of other places don't have. So that when you say trolleys, we do. Our trolleys are underground. Do they go every place? No, but there's at least in Manhattan, a central business district, there is a lot of ways to get around on a subway. You don't have to walk that many blocks from a subway to get where you want to go.
Right.
Maybe a little bit circuitous. But
let me take a break right here. When we come back, we'll get into the other road story that we can talk about, and that's the congestion pricing tolls for the MTA. We'll get into that with Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment. Again, if you've got a question, 800-321-0710. Before we're finished, we'll let you ask the questions of Mayor Mike at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Let's go check on the news. You got a question for Mayor Mike? 800-321-0710. We'll get to you in just a little bit. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Friday, John Gambling Show, News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Shelley seems to have, if not 100%, close to it, blessed the bridge, tolling of the East River bridges.
Well, he got great editorials today saying he's doing something, and that's exactly what he said. In all fairness to Shelley, when I had my plan, they didn't like it. They turned it down. They said they had a better plan. You know, you could sit around saying, what is it? Well, here is now, and the governor deserves a lot of credit, too, because it all came about. He called Ravitz in, who used to run the MTA, said, come up with a plan. Ravitz came up with a plan. Two different sources, a payroll tax, which is sort of like it gets everybody. You can argue taxes are bad, but if you want to fund it, that's that and these tolls. And Shelley's listened, and, you know, I will support anything that helps the MTA. We have to have mass transit, and if we have to raise tolls by 23%, which is in our budget for the MTA, and cut services, that would be a very bad thing. Having said that, we need to have two things. We need to have a capital fund so we can expand and make mass transit more pleasurable and more efficient so you have fewer people. That's the only way you're going to reduce your expenses.
Will those monies come from these two ideas?
We'll see. You know, the devil's always in the details. We'll see what the legislation is. It's a democracy. Shelley's got to get his members on board. There's the state senate and the governor. So we'll see what happens. But I've tried to sort of stay out of it. We had a plan. Hopefully they'll take some parts of it and change it. As long as they come up with something that's good for the city, I'll support it. Will it be painless? No. The MTA is fundamentally without enough money to continue to provide services. That's why they have to raise tolls. And it has a $0 capital budget when in a world where we desperately need.
Will federal stimulus money get to that or not?
A minor amount for the some for the Second Avenue subway. We're, as you know, building with city dollars, the number 7 line extension. We've got to find some ways to get the state to help us. We really need one more station on that line, and we'd need some help from the state to do that. But the federal stimulus package is not going to bail out the state or the city. We still have very challenging times. New York City's tax revenues for 2010, which starts this coming July 1st, the fiscal year, is going to be $5 billion less than it was in 2008. $5 billion, a lot of money, even for New York
City.
Seems
to me to be a lot, yeah.
Yeah, you don't get paid that much.
Not nearly.
And I certainly don't. You get paid a lot more than I do.
Tell me about the budget, the federal budget that was talked about yesterday. How will New York, do you think, benefit or not?
You know, we're still analyzing the stimulus package. It's very complex when the federal government spends that amount of money. I suspect nobody's ever read the whole thing. Sometimes when it gets passed, because these always get passed in the dead of night with a lot of rushing and no time for everybody to sit and analyze and read. That's just the way legislators work. Every place in the world, I assume, but certainly in the United States at every level of government. And when you get done reading it, there's two problems. One, sometimes it says something that nobody anticipated. Number two, it may say something that you don't like and doesn't work. And number three, there'll be court battles and arguments over what it does say. So there's always a follow-on bill to correct minor things. And some of these things are left to the discretion of the state. So what we've got to do is make sure that our city legislators in the state make sure that we don't bear all the burden of balancing the state budget. I'm sympathetic with the state. I know they've got to cut back aid to all of the 62 counties. As long as it's done fairly, that's fine. If only the 5 counties of the 5 boroughs of New York bear the brunt, no, then we're going to fight like heck to make sure that doesn't happen. In the meantime, cities have got to be responsible for themselves, just like the state's got to be responsible for itself. In this city, we've cut $3 billion out of our budget for next year, and we are looking to do more. The worrisome thing is our tax revenues continue to decline. Our transfer tax revenues, which is when you sell a building or a house, we get a piece, and we had a little tax on that. So does the state. So does the MTA. That's falling precipitously. There's no real estate transactions. And we've cut in half. It was way down, and now we're cutting that. Remains to be seen what's going to happen with income taxes and sales taxes. But, you know, it's one of these good news, bad news things. The bad news is we're in very tough times, and they will probably go on for a while. The good news is I think New York will come out of this stronger relative to the rest of the country. And so what you got to do is get yourself through the downturn. And what I've got to do is find ways to help people get through the downturn, whether it's a new traffic pattern to get more people into stores, or training people for new jobs, or helping small businesses, which if every small business added one person, you'd solve your unemployment problem. As you know, half the people in New York City work for small businesses. Giving people counsel when their mortgage comes due and they can't pay it. I mean, there are a lot of things, not trying to scam the system, but there are protections and people don't know about it. So we have a whole series of people that can answer those questions if you just call 311. And what I keep urging people is if you're in trouble, don't wait until it's a disaster. Go to the hospital if you don't feel well before it gets worse. Call 311 and get help counseling before they come to lock you out of your house or before you lose your job. Can we solve everybody's health problem, mortgage problem, or job problem? No, but you can make a difference.
All right, you have said over the last 7 years on this program over and over again that New York City and New York State to a degree as well relies on the financial industry of New York City and also the wealth and the capital that is New York City. With the new budget, there is an attack on those that have more resource than others.
Well,
isn't that going to exacerbate city problems?
We need people to have business conferences because they do it in our hotels and our restaurants. We need people to have disposable income so they can buy things in stores. That's how people who work in stores make a living. We need and people in restaurants make a living, and people in hotels make a living, and people who drive taxis and buses. Our cops and firefighters, they need people to make money, lots of money, in New York, and because we tax. That's where our revenues come from. And you got to be very careful. I understand the city needs money, and nobody likes higher taxes, but in the end, if we can't balance the budget any other ways, we have to do that. State, same thing. Federal government, the same thing. Federal government can print money. They can create a very big problem, but they can defer it to down the road for our kids and grandkids. The state can defer it a little bit. They can borrow. New York City can't defer it at all. We have to have a balanced budget, and we can't borrow money for operating expenses. And if everybody had that same financial requirement, I think we'd all be better off, but that's not going to happen. So.
Rupert Murdoch earlier this week made the statement at some conference that he believes the financial crisis that besets the world is going to change not only companies and the way they are and who they are, but countries as well.
There are countries. Iceland is fundamentally bankrupt. We talk about Bernie Madoff, where people lost all their savings here. Some people in Europe lost their savings with Madoff. But Iceland was the big disaster over there. People bought securities in Icelandic banks and had loans through Icelandic banks, and they became worthless. So this is not just an American problem. It's not just a Bernie Madoff problem. It is a problem we're all guilty. We went for 6 or 7 years where every day the stock market went up and the value of our houses went up and businesses expanded and you could borrow money for lower interest rates with less requirements on financial disclosure and meeting covenants and that sort of thing. And nobody wanted to end it. You, me, everybody else. And then, like every other time,
the drugs feel good.
You know, in the history of mankind, nothing lasts forever. It always comes down. And if you look at the pattern, it tends to go up slowly and consistently and then correct violently and almost in a straight line.
Which we've seen.
Which, exactly. It happened at the end of the internet bubble. Then we got another 7 years. It happened at the end of the derivatives bubble, or whatever you want to call this, or the mortgage bubble. Do you think we're going to learn our lesson?
No.
No, we will. This will turn around, and we'll have a period of sustained growth, and there will be excesses, and nobody's going to want to blow the whistle, and then we'll have a correction. The trouble is, you know, we don't learn, but we've got to. What we have learned from the past, at least I hope the city has learned, is we can't walk away from those that need help. We can't walk away from the person that has devoted their lives to making this city better, our municipal workforce. Having said that, they got to share the pain with everybody else. We're all part of it.
All right. Different subject, completely different subject. We're going to change, the entire category here and go from money to bed bugs. You got a bed bug patrol?
I wondered where you were going with that.
You got a bed bug patrol? I hear they're out of control.
The front page of El Diario had a cute cartoon with bed bugs. Bed bugs are a problem, and it's not just one thing is...
We laugh about it, but if you've got them, it's bad.
Don't get a used mattress. Don't pick up a mattress off the street. I mean, you know, all of this comes about, and people say, oh, I did everything right. But, you know, look at... Call 311. The health department can tell you how to deal with the problem. It's in some sense we're laughing about it, but as you point out, if the bed bugs are in your bed, it's serious. If the bed bugs are in the other guy's bed, then it's funny.
One more question, then we'll go to a break, and then we'll get to the phones.
But a
here.
Clever transition.
Thank you very much. A personal friend asked me to ask you because she felt that the streets of city, she's a city resident, are dirtier than they were in the past.
Hope not. She should call 311 if there is an area. We do have an independent survey. We do every month, I think it is. They go look in different places and they
kind of
count.
Rate where they are?
Yeah. And, the sanitation department's done a very good job. I think when it's very windy, then trash blows around. And so, you know, on a windy day, you drive down the street and you say, oh, my God, look at all this trash. When the wind stops, it gets picked up. You can't really do anything during the wind. And maybe it's a little worse in the winter because the sanitation department has to plow and cars. We suspend alternate. Every time we suspend alternate side of the street parking, it costs the city something like $300,000. In foregone parking revenues from parking meters and extra overtime to clean the streets. So when the city council comes up with another holiday...
They seem like it's almost every day.
Well, it was originally done for holidays where religious customs or requirements prevented you from driving. So we said, okay, we won't do it that day because your religion keeps you from doing it. It then got carried away, and, well, it's a respect thing. So if you did it for one religion, you got to do it for the other religions, and that has nothing to do. They can drive, but respect is important, and that's what the city council does.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're going to go to the phones here. Question time in just a minute, 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
WOR.
All right, it's your turn to ask the questions, 800-321-0710.
Before you do that, I meant to mention it before. The other day we had a press conference at One Police Plaza to announce the arrest of one of the perpetrators in that terrible hate crime. If you remember, two Ecuadorians, my brothers were walking, and these guys got out of a car, cut one up with a broken bottle and had a baseball and started whacking the guy when he was in his head when he was on the ground.
You caught one of them.
We caught one of them, and we're going to have an announcement later today, some good news. I talked to the police department this morning, and D.A. Hines from Brooklyn and has really been terribly helpful in all of this, and Christine Quinn, our Speaker of the City Council, who's really tried to focus on hate crimes as well. Everybody, the PD and Kelly, they keep going after these guys.
Good guy and Kelly and the whole group.
Yeah, I mean, I first got to know Joe. He's very big interest in domestic violence and reducing it. And our first domestic shelter, which Joe Torre raised a lot of the money for, because Joe Torre came from a broken family, domestic violence. Was in Brooklyn. Now we have one in Queens. I think the next one's scheduled for the Bronx. Anyways,
all right, let's go to the phones. Mr. Mayor, we're going to start with Irene up in Mayopac, New York. Hi, Irene, good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor.
We don't have a lot of time, so get right to your question.
Yes, I'd like to know, I am a retired person receiving a pension in New York State, and I was just recently informed that municipal pensioners in New York State, for example, police, firemen, teachers, whatever, all municipal employees, do not pay New York State income tax on their pensions.
That's correct. Pensions from municipal employees throughout the state are free from state tax. In New York City, they're free from state and city tax. If you get a disability pension, you're free from federal, state, and city taxes. So that's why disability pensions, you know, they cost a lot of money. Now, if people are really sick, really hurt in the job, that's fine. You want to make sure that there aren't any scammers, and there's always a handful. You know, if your pension goes from 50% to 75% because it's classified as disability versus a pension, and then it's triple tax exempt, it's worth an awful lot more money,
sure,
which is why occasionally you get a scammer. Hopefully,
all right,
not
Irene,
very many.
Good luck on that one. Lucky lady you are. Phil in Kew Gardens, right to the question, please.
Yes, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I'm a small property owner here, a three-family mixed-use property in Queens.
Yep.
I only own one property. I've had it for the last 5 years. My taxes have gone up 30%. My water and sewage has gone up 50%. What kind of breaks do you plan on giving us? And I opened my envelope this year. My taxes went up again. What kind of break are you going to give the little guy?
Well, we're trying to keep taxes down. When I came into office, we really, after the internet bubble ended and there was a big economic turndown in 9/11, the city just didn't have any money to pay its employees, and we raised taxes. As things got better and the revenues grew, we reduced taxes. Now, with this recession, we've got to pay our employees, and so property taxes went back up 7%. The truth of the matter is, if we want to have a new water tunnel, if we want to have sewerage systems that work, it costs money. That's why the water bills keep going up. If we want to have safe streets and good schools and get to people when there's a fire or a medical emergency, our employees have to get paid. I think the real answer to you, Phil, is we've cut $3 billion out of the city budget, so it could have been a lot worse. But I can't tell you yet that we can see the other side of this. And sadly, property taxes are going up, in your case, probably more because your assessments went up. And even though they come back down, we have these rules that keep from property tax from going up too much every year and too much every 5 years. And so a little bit of this catch up. But I know it's a struggle. It really is for everybody.
It is on every turn. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. Next Friday, I hope we can get together once again.
Looking forward to it.
Mia as well. Thank you very much, as always.